The last 2 years have been marked by the adoption of historic criminal justice reforms in New York. In 2019, among other things, the state legislature and Governor Andrew Cuomo took steps to further decriminalize marijuana possession, drastically curtailed the use of cash bail, and overhauled the evidentiary disclosure process. And last year, buoyed by the protests following the killing of George Floyd, the state passed a series of police accountability measures, with the highlight being the repeal of a law that previously made police disciplinary records inaccessible to the public. But now we're looking ahead at what's next for the legislature, and to do that, we're joined by State Senator Jamal Bailey, a Bronx Democrat who is chair of the Chamber's Codes Committee, through which basically all criminal justice bills must flow. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Hey, Dave. Happy New Year, and I'm happy to be back, and thank God it's 2021, huh?
Yeah, well, let's see how that goes. So as you think about the new legislative session and how you and your colleagues want to spend your political capital, what's sort of your top criminal justice priority? Is it marijuana legalization or something else?
I think our conference has shown that, and this is one of my oft-used phrases, that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think that the legalization of adult-use cannabis is critically important. But I think that we can do other things. I think there are more things to do concerning justice reform in general, concerning policing, and concerning specifically, we're talking about youthful interrogation. There was a recent op-ed written by some members of the Exonerated Five, and they spoke to some bills that that I and Senator Zelno Amiri carry about what happens when young folks are in these interrogation rooms. And getting some of these things done is critically important, in my opinion, and we should certainly make sure we're moving forward with that, as well as expungement. You know, the expungement is also incredibly critical. So, giving people a legitimate clean slate, I know that's the name of the awareness campaign, but people need a clean slate to be able to move forward in progress.
Can you talk a little bit about youthful interrogation and what you see as the potential role with state legislation in terms of reforming this process?
So, one of the things about young people is that we don't have, young people, while I think of myself as young, I am not under the age of majority in any shape, sense, or form. I used to be the youngest senator.
I was about to say, remember the good old days?
Oh man, for two full years, I had the crown, and then Julio Salazar came and everybody else to take that away.
But yeah.
All great folks doing great work. In any event, youthful interrogations is the same argument as a similar argument with raising the age of criminal responsibility. Young folks aren't necessarily able to comprehend or formulate these opinions in their mind, and they should have access to counsel prior to going into these rooms where they're being interrogated. They may not know the gravity of the confession that they're going to be making. They don't know the gravity of the charges that they're charged with. So they need people that are going to be there to be able to assist them on that path and go forward. So.
When it was announced that you would be leading the Codes Committee again, you tweeted that, quote, "There's always more to get done in our endless quest to make a fairer New York." When you think about fairness, what are the different sides that you're trying to balance there in terms of making things equal?
We still have a justice system that by and large predominantly still incarcerates and imprisons people of color. We still have a justice system that by and large discriminates against individuals who are without wealth, for lack of a better term. So those are some of the systematic injustices that we need to be able to take a look at. We should also take a look at returning individuals. You've come home, you have paid your debt to society, and you are looking to rehabilitate yourself. However, we find ourselves in a position where young people or older people or anybody coming back home, they find themselves in a precarious situation when it comes to many of their opportunities, the training programs, the lack of job opportunities. We're talking about technical parole violations, the Less Is More Act, something sponsored by Senator Brian Benjamin. We have a lot of different things that we want to make sure that returning individuals have access to justice. And we're talking about expungement of records, the Clean Slate program, making sure that people can have expunged records so that they can move forward from some of the mistakes that they've made in the past. I'm understanding of the balance that public safety has to be present and ever present, and we have to make sure that public safety is present. But we can't, but we can walk and chew gum at the same time, Dave. Like, we can make sure that we are protecting the public, but we're also giving people opportunity to remove themselves from these situations.
Yeah, in terms of that balance, how do you judge, I guess, the state of public safety? Because your colleagues across the aisle, the Republican lawmakers, argue that, you know, the last 2 years have made New Yorkers less safe. And they point to a lot of anecdotal evidence that doesn't necessarily jibe with, you know, broad trends. So I'm curious, how do you view the situation? I mean, do you feel, I guess, for starters, that New York is as safe a place as it was, say, 2 years ago?
I think that the pandemic has exacerbated everything. It's turned everything on its head. It has challenged the conventional thinking about anything. So I think that data that we've collected during this period, or things that we've seen during this time period, a lot of those things are very difficult to be able to assess, you know, as something that is set in stone. I do believe that we are safe in this state. I do believe that that we have, you know, good women and men in public service who are looking to protect us. But I do believe that we can continue to endeavor to be fairer in the way that things in the way that justice is meted out. For example, we saw yesterday what some would consider protests. I don't consider that to be protests. They look like rioters.
Sedition works too.
Sedition, yes, but like the treason, a number of things that, you know, that look to be completely ridiculous that we saw, an affront to anything American. But when we look at individuals who are protesting in the cities within America for injustices that have happened at the hands of, you know, law enforcement, to people of color, the handling of those scenarios was way different. And again, I am looking for fair and equal treatment for everyone. I respect the heck out of the police, Dave, but I respect the heck out of my community as well. And I think that we have to be able to find some sort of common ground in order to move forward and not look at finger pointing on one side. And the problem is that we say this side and that side. It's not really a side. You know, it is more of an understanding that we have that we're better together.
Last year, state lawmakers moved a package of police reform bills in the summer, and in the next few months, municipalities are due to submit new plans for policing their communities. Do you think the state needs to make additional changes to local police departments and how public safety is approached in communities around New York? I mean, do you see a further role for the state in this process?
Well, you know, the governor's executive order has indicated that that municipalities have to send a plan to the governor's office about what does that reform look like. And as I represent the city of New York and the borough of the Bronx and the city of Mount Vernon, I've had conversations in both parts of my district to that effect about how do we make sure that we're hearing what people on the ground say. We're hearing what people's issues and concerns are with policing. And I think that anytime you're looking to make changes, it has to be at the most granular basic level. And the most granular basic level is finding out what does Jane and Joe Public, for lack of a better term, what do they want? What do they feel about how policing is carried out in their community? How do they feel policing is carried out in their community? And what would they think make it better? Because, like, you know, as a legislator, I have my views. Individually, as an African American man, I have my own views as well. But it's important as legislators for us to take the views of others into account. Because, you know, when I go up there and I'm voting and I'm going up there and I'm drafting bills, I know I'm not just doing that for just me. I'm doing that on behalf of my district, and the laws that we enact, they affect the entire state. So it's about making sure that we are getting perspective and moving forward from that perspective and crafting that perspective into law, using that perspective to craft law.
Do you think state laws should be changed to weaken the collective bargaining power of law enforcement unions, considering it's their contracts, which often serve as a burden to reform or significant public safety change?
That's something that I'd have to look further into about the nature of the unions. Obviously, I am a huge proponent of labor. I do believe, however, that far too often, sometimes members of law enforcement who have committed grievous acts or egregious acts have not necessarily been held accountable. And sometimes, you know, we can use some help with that. But I don't, you know, I'm not sure at this time. I'd have to look more into that issue.
What sort of appetite do you think your colleagues have to enact criminal justice reforms, at least maybe big ticket things, in the wake of sort of the, I guess, really vocal backlash following the enactment of the criminal justice reforms from the last 2 years?
I'm hopeful that, you know, we continue the path that we've taken. We have a supermajority led by our great leader, Andre Stewart Cousins, and we have a bunch of new members from different geographical regions throughout the state that haven't yet been represented. So, you know, I want to take the temperature of some of my newer colleagues and see how they feel. I know many of my returning colleagues still have a desire, and I'm hopeful that we can, you know, channel that desire and energy into making more, you know, policy. Because again, the policies that we did that you mentioned, the police reform, were groundbreaking. I think that people wanted them, and I think that the legislature stepped up and we did it. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we're a legislature that, and we've shown by our election that people want change like this. Our members were not affected in the way that people thought they would. Our candidates were not affected in the way that people thought they would be with justice reform. So I'm hopeful that we don't have quote unquote justice reform fatigue, and that we can continue to move forward stronger and act even more.
In 2019, you passed a massive overhaul of the state's pretrial detention laws, aka the use of bail. And just a few months into those changes being implemented last year, they were rolled back a bit. Do you envision additional changes to pretrial detention making their way through the Capitol this year? Say, maybe a complete elimination of cash bail, which is like what some advocates on the left want?
Well, it's something. And again, anytime we can look at systems and make them better, you're always looking to take a holistic view of that. Those conversations have not been had in detail. Mm-hmm. There's always a way for us to have a conversation about anything that can help, you know, push our justice system along further.
In your committee for the last couple of years, there's been a piece of legislation touted as a repeal of the walking while trans ban, which would essentially amend the state's loitering laws to prevent police officers from allegedly targeting transgender prostitutes. How come this bill hasn't moved so far? And is this the year for it to potentially happen?
Well, I'm a co-sponsor of the bill, Dave, and I do believe that it is something that unfairly targets a certain subsection of our society, individuals who happen to be transgender, transgender women of color, you know, and it's something I disproportionately affect them. So I'm hopeful that we can move this bill this year, and it's the right thing to do from a public policy perspective, in my opinion. The bill sponsor, Senator Hoylman, has done a great job in terms of galvanizing more sponsors. And I'm hopeful that we can move it forward this coming legislative session.
When it comes to moving a bill like that, what is it that makes it so that a bill can be advanced like that? I mean, you know, we have a committee process, we have committee chairs. Do you guys have just the autonomy to move things along and get it to the floor? Are there discussions that happen with the entire conference to decide how to move things? What is that behind the scenes discussion like?
Well, you know, look, we're a team in the Democratic Conference, and we have a leadership team. So bills that are moved, they're moved because of a totality of circumstance-based approach. It's the bill ready? Does the bill have technical flaws? Is that bill something that would advance the means of which the bill seeks to advance? And those are conversations that we have with staff, with council, with leadership. You know, and all of those things are critically important in making sure that we get bills moved and get bills out of committee. And it's also speaking to members, and it's also looking at co-sponsorship. So I wouldn't say that there's one specific magic button or magic bullet, so to speak, that would move a bill. It's just a number of things in totality.
Do you have any hearings planned for 2021 at this point?
Not as of yet, but we're in the works and then having conversations with central staff and leadership about how to move forward with some of those necessary hearings. Because one of the things that we have to do is, this majority has been amazing at it, holding hearings on subject matter issues so that the public has an opportunity to see that we are a deliberative body. And that we've seen issues, we've thought about issues, we've heard issues from many sides, like the hearings that my committee and my colleagues held on the repeal of 50A in October of 2019, one in the city of New York, one in Albany. We held those hearings because they were helpful and instructive about hearing global perspectives on what the repeal of 50A would look like. So, well, look, I plan on holding some hearings. It's just a matter of subject matter and dates and timing. And also with COVID, everything has kind of been thrown out of whack. So we're just still looking to how to figure out how to get those things done.
For the first time in a long time, the Senate's counterpart on the Codes Committee, the Assembly Chair, will no longer be Joe Lentol, who lost his primary last year and no longer in the Assembly. And I was curious, will that change now having Jeff Dinowitz, Assemblyman, leading the Codes Committee, affect what the legislature can pass? I mean, personalities can, how they run their committees can potentially affect what gets through. And I was curious, do you see this having any impact on what the legislature accomplishes in the future?
Well, one, the Assembly is a separate deliberative body, so
some experience.
Well, I do, but they I wouldn't want to wade too far into the manner in which they operate. I will say that I'm going to miss Joe. Joe was a mentor to me in many ways, as I would call him the OG chair of the Codes Committee. He was fighting for many criminal justice related reform matters long before I even thought about politics. And I want to thank Joe for his kindness and his leadership and the things that he gave me. I have a excellent relationship with some member Dinowitz as well, as a member in the Bronx. Jeff and I have a relationship that spans some years. I think that I'm going to enjoy a good relationship with Codes Committee Chair Dinowitz. And I don't know how it would affect the movement of bills going forward in the Assembly, unlike in the Senate. The Assembly's Codes Committee, as you well know, David, but just for our listeners' information, it's a dual reference committee, which means that it doesn't necessarily have to deal with just the criminal justice related bills as it is in the Senate. So I'm not sure how that would impact, our legislative process going forward. But I do think that we have a lot of great legislators that are going to continue to push on things that we need to get done in this coming session.
And in terms of a pacing for this coming session, I mean, in 2019, at the start of the new legislature, you guys, were out of the gates, sprinting. And I'm curious, do you expect 2021 to be a similar pace, or is this going to be maybe more drawn out? And also, how do you anticipate the budget factoring into this? I mean, do you want to see criminal justice measures enacted through the state budget?
To quote the great Malcolm X, by any means necessary. We have to get done what we need to get done, how we can get it done. Now, as a legislator, do I advocate and do I prefer that we get things done through the legislative process because it's more deliberative, because there is more more contemplation, there is a record of voting on specific bills? Absolutely. I prefer us getting things done through the legislative process as opposed to the budgetary process. However, I think that if we can get something important done and it happens to be in the budget, then so be it.
The legislative leader, Andrew Stewart Cousins, has made a major point of saying how getting a supermajority would be very important for the Senate Democrats' ability to advance its agenda. As you think about the upcoming session, how do you think that's going to manifest itself when it comes to criminal justice?
I'm hopeful that the new members that we have that gave us the supermajority, and it's not just hopeful, it's a belief that they're fair-minded and justice-oriented, and that they're going to look at criminal justice just as intently as our returning members did. I'm hopeful that when we get a chance to be able to look at what we've done, whether it's in 10 years, 20 years, and I want this legislature, the people that are in this legislature to be able to look back and say that we actually legitimately were able to change the lives of New Yorkers for the better. And I think that every one of my colleagues is committed to doing that. In terms of justice reform, it's just more conversations with some of the newer members about how they feel. But I think that the more fair and justice-minded individuals you have in a great conference can only be better.
Well, we've been talking about the potential for criminal justice legislation in 2021, and our guest has been long-suffering New York Knicks fan and state senator Jamal Bailey, who co-chairs the Chamber's Codes Committee, through which all criminal justice bills must flow. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Dave, my pleasure.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.